Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
You're listening to the man whose mother still thinks he should try to get a real job.
Dear folks, I got this great job in a gas station. I don't want to say how much I'm getting, but let's just say it's a lot. I'm enclosing $2.
That's a good boy.
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
She still doesn't know exactly what I do. She told somebody, I don't know what he does, but he must be good at it. That's a true story, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back, 34 After. I'm Jim Blasingame, and I'm after all these years, I still need to get a real job, don't I? And it's a radio business. It's a wacky world, isn't it? If you don't believe that, ask a radio person. And anyway, it's good to be back with you. Good to continue to be with you. You're going to be glad you're with me because we got a really important person here, folks, on the show. David Dossie is a good friend of ours. He's my intellectual property attorney, and he's one of the best in the business, especially. He was the original intellectual property attorney in our brain trust all the way back to 04, and he's our good friend. We're going to talk about patents today. David Dossie, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Jim. I'm always happy to be here.
Partner with Gallagher and Dossie out of the great state of Ohio, and you know, David, we used to call you guys patent attorneys for what 250 years we called you patent attorneys. Now we talk about intellectual property. And that's appropriate because the world, you know, for years, I bet, you know, generations ago, your forebears in the industry, they probably did 1,000 patents for every trademark that they did.
Sure, sure. And usually when I'm on the show, we're talking more generally about intellectual property, but today it's specifically patents, and that's because patents, when you misspeak on the subject of patents, that is the quick way to undermine any credibility you have.
There's a lot of misinformation about patents, a lot of misunderstanding about patents. But you know, here's what's interesting about patents, though. Even people who aren't inventors are fascinated by the concept of a patent, aren't they?
Oh, sure, definitely. And I'm happy to say, even just within the last few years, it seems like just because more and more publicity of patent litigation and patents and intellectual property, people in general are much better educated today on the subject of patents and intellectual property than they were just a few years ago.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And Bill Schley was just on the show, and he was telling me about the book, his new book. The original cover, he had all these brands on the cover to identify sort of intuitively what the book was about, and then he realized he probably would get sued by putting all those brands on his book by all the people who owned them. So let's talk about some of these myths about patents. What's the first myth?
Well, the first one that when I have to correct inventors when they come to see us.
And talk show hosts, right?
Right. That draw the most blank stares when they say it is that a small business owner will say, how can I be sued for patent infringement? I have a patent on my invention.
Right.
So that's one of the biggest myths, is that just because you receive a patent on your invention does not mean that your invention isn't also infringing a dozen other patents.
So they think they not only filed it with the patent office, but they filed it with the FBI?
Well,
and the FBI is supposed to defend them against all interlopers.
You know, that's like the first person to get a patent on a hybrid drivetrain for a car. Well, I bet there have been 1,000 patents since then, and
right,
it's possible that all 1,000 of those need to license that first patent on a hybrid drivetrain just so they can produce their own patented product.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So once you have the patent, you still, and see, that's, you know, I've said this many times before, David, when you've been here, when I remember years ago when I knew enough about it to tell some of my clients that, you know, if you want to get a patent, that's fine, but you have to be prepared to defend that patent yourself, right?
Sure. And in fact, one of the other myths on my list is that patent owners often think once it's patented, Well, the patent office will prevent others from infringing my patent. And I'd say once a month I get a call from someone saying, I just called the Patent and Trademark Office to tell them that X, Y, and Z was infringing my patent, and they acted like they could care less.
Well, that's because
that's not their job. Yeah,
because
right.
They couldn't care less.
Right. And so, yes, it's just like anything else. If you had a contract with a supplier and they or if you bought a car that turned out to be a lemon, even though you registered it with the DMV, you know, you're not going to go up to your license bureau and say, hey, this car's a piece of junk.
Well, people think that a patent is similar to a title to a piece of land.
You know, even if there is a title dispute over the boundaries of a piece of property, you know, you have to pursue that.
You still have to. You're right. You still have to, but it's a little easier. The problem is, though, it's a little easier to identify a corner of a piece of property than it is the corner of a patent. We'll come back with more myths. We're going to dispel more myths on patents with our good friend David Dossie right after these messages. I'm Jim Blassingame. Stay with me.
Are you reeling in the years? Showing away the time. Are you gathering?
Little Steely Dan bringing us back. 17 till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Thanks for staying with me. My website is smallbusinessadvocate.com. Lots of good things there to help you with your small business. Hope you check it out when you get a chance. You can read, you can listen, you can ask questions, you can check out my blog, etc., etc. Lots of stuff there. smallbusinessadvocate.com. And don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. And take our poll question, which is right on the homepage. And when you give us your answer, when you answer the poll question, you will be able to see how the poll is going so far. So check that out, smallbusinessadvocate.com. David Dossie is our guest. He's a longtime member of our Brain Trust, the intellectual property expert in my life, in my business. And we're talking about, he's with Gallagher & Dossie, that's his firm. And David, that's invention-protection.com?
Exactly.
That's the website. So let's talk about some more of these myths. We're talking about myths that people have in their head about patents. The first one we talked about was about that once you have a patent that, you know, you're locked up, that you're, you know, you're golden. But the truth is you have to defend those. And don't get a patent. Because when you get a patent, David, as you taught us, basically the world has access to your every element of your idea because a patent is revealed. Once the patent is done, it's public record, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
And so now everybody can know what you've done, and they can do a variation off of your idea and get another patent and maybe beat you, and it'll be your responsibility to defend it. And isn't this one issue right here, David, the essence of when how people make a decision about whether to keep something a trade secret or to go to a patent?
Sure. You know, there's a delicate balancing act between something that you can keep a trade secret, And if you know that you can't, then your only protection is via patent protection. Because if you sell a product, like the car manufacturers, I remember at General Motors where I grew up, you'd go there and they'd have all the competitors' cars there. They've taken them apart. They analyze every component.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's virtually impossible to have any trade secrets in that field, other than perhaps manufacturing methods or painting methods that are hidden deep in a facility. But if you can buy the product and disassemble it, see how it works, and reverse engineer it, then you're not going to be able. Trade secrets aren't applicable.
Right. Exactly. All right. What's another myth?
Okay. Another one is I hear people say, "Well, I don't copy others' products, therefore I don't have to worry about patents or don't have to infringe patents." And you know.
You mean they don't intentionally do it.
Intentionally, right. Yeah. And intent is not a requirement. In fact, most patent infringement lawsuits, I'd say majority, the other party didn't even know about
the
patent.
It was an accident.
It was an accident. And and that's like saying, you know, none of my employees smoke, therefore my building's not going to burn down.
Right.
And the key difference I tell people is, well, if your building burns down, you've got insurance to cover all those losses and costs, whereas you accidentally infringe someone's patent, that's out of pocket.
You could have gone well down the road, thousands, maybe millions of dollars into R&D to develop something, and then find out that somebody else had the patent, and it might even be something that they were sitting on. They hadn't spent the money that you spent. What do they call them, squatters?
Sure.
And they just own the patent. It might be a big company, might be some little guy out there. But they own the patent, and they've done nothing to develop it. And here you, of course, if you own a patent, don't you have to do something with it? Is that one of the myths?
Yes, you don't. You have to pay maintenance fees, but you don't actually have to produce product.
In fact, if you own a patent based on a sketch or a prototype, you never have to make one, do you?
Correct.
Interesting. All right, what else?
Okay. Another one is my company only uses old technology, so I don't have to worry about patents. And what's considered old technology is very subjective. And in fact, some of our best clients are in industries where you think those products have been out 30, 40, 50 years. You know, old school construction equipment. And the most common thing small inventors say to us is, if they got sued, is, well, that's been out there for decades. And it's, well, that's a very easy thing to say. But when it comes time to prove it, you know, okay, show me what product manufactured what year incorporates the features of this patent that someone is accusing you of infringing. Well, then they realize, oh, so you can get patents on very specific improvements, even on old technologies.
So you're talking about where somebody infringes upon an old patent? I'm a little confused about that one.
Well, if you're in a business making shovels, let's say, or garden equipment, they think, oftentimes a company will think, well, I don't need to worry about patents because people have made wheelbarrow shovels
for
hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you know, most of the time the products that are selling in that field are the ones with the, it might work like traditional scissors, but now it's got an ergonomic handle and it's got this feature and that feature. Mm-hmm. And they dismiss that their products aren't worthy of patent protection just because it's a field that's been around a long time.
What about value? What about the value of a patent?
Right. The one very common mistake is that all patents have value. And in fact, there is a large portion of patents that, you know, people come to me and I'd say, I wouldn't give $1,000 to own that patent. And people are always surprised. But they spent, you know, $20,000, $30,000.
Yeah, maybe their life savings
to get a patent.
Something. Yeah.
And I wouldn't give $1,000 for it. And I say, yeah, that's the hard cold reality of it, is that patents are, you know, just like the deed to your property. You have your surveyor points defining the bounds of a patent. Well, a patent can look very good if you just flip through the figures, but when it comes down to looking at those bounds of the patent, which are defined in the claims, it may be very specific, such that it's ridiculously easy to design around.
When we come back, I want you to tell us how we can start down the road toward an invention and not go too far before we find out whether it has value or not. And that, we'll do that right after these messages. Tim Till, right back with David Dossie. I'm Jim Blassing, and we're talking about some of the myths of patents. Welcome back. 7 Till. I'm Jim Blassingame. Thanks for staying with me. Having a great visit with our good friend David Dossie. David is an intellectual property attorney, a patent attorney, partner at the firm of Gallagher and Dossie in Columbus, Ohio. And David, that's invention-protection.com.
Exactly.
Can they find the list of these myths on your website?
Yes, we actually
have. Done that?
We have articles on copyright myths, patent myths, all sorts of articles.
So folks, go check. And that's free too, right?
Yes.
Thank you for that. So folks, go check out these myths that David and I are talking about and have been talking about over the years. So check out that website. It's not your grandfather's patent attorney website. Okay, value. We're talking about this myth about that all patents have value, and you busted that myth by saying that, you know, it may not have value. You may have spent a lot of money on it, but it may not have any value. How can we, quickly, David, how can we, before we go too far down the road, get too invested physically and financially into a patent, how do we determine if it has value?
Well, even before you get to the patenting stage, just when you're kicking off an R&D project, I tell people, you know, if you're about to spend $20,000, $50,000, whatever it is, on just getting started on R&D, would it be helpful to spend $2,000 or whatever it is to get a feel for the landscape of all the patents that are out there so that potentially you could recognize early before you've spent the R&D money that your competitor has a patent covering this and you're not going to be able to introduce that product? Or alternatively, people often underestimate that the USPTO records are the largest repository of scientific and engineering data in the world. And oftentimes, in a patent application, they will spell out what they've tried and didn't work to solve a problem to emphasize why what they did do that worked is unique. So
if you fail in developing a patent, it's your own fault in a lot of ways, because there's plenty of information out there to help you to set yourself on the right course.
Well, and if you spend $100,000 in R&D and then find out that there are 50 patents in that general technology area that you're going to have to dive and dodge around each one of those,
right?
You know, you could have learned that for a lot less money, just having someone do a little bit of upfront research.
Right, and that's what a firm like yours does that helps you with. Okay, let's move on to some of the other myths.
Okay, another myth is that patents protect anything illustrated in the drawings. And again, that's where I mentioned earlier, a patent may look very overwhelming when you see 50 pages of patent drawings, but when it comes down to the fact that you know, the claims are what define the scope, and those claims may be very specific, that it has, you know, certain parts of it have to be rotatably connected or something like that. You just have to understand that don't just look at patent drawings to determine if it has an impact on you. And then secondly, patents do require maintenance fees to be paid, and there are three maintenance fee payments, and I'd say the first one, 50% of patents never pay that. So after, say, 4 years, it's public domain. So people look at a patent and see the issue date and think, I'm smart, you know, it's 20 years from the filing date is the life of a patent. Well, that's only if all the maintenance fees are paid.
Right.
So you could be worrying about something that actually you can use without having to consult
anybody. And so that,
that's
where somebody like you can help them with that.
Yeah,
to find out whether
you can check online, but not many people ever think about that.
Right. Now that's a good point. Is in fact there may be something out there that may be a way to snoop around and see if you can find an opportunity out there.
Well, and that's where this all ties into. We've talked many times about competitive intelligence. Just like you know, you have all your competitors' product catalogs on your shelves, or if you're a retailer, you know what all your competitor retailers sell products for. You know, you really ought to have those catalogs that, you know, the patent portfolio of your five biggest competitors, so you know what they own,
right,
what they don't own.
Right. David, 30 seconds. You got one quick one?
What else? The biggest mistake I see with regard to making yourself look bad is there is no such thing as a provisional patent. So when you file a patent application, that's all it is. It's an application.
Mm-hmm.
And if you refer to it as a patent before a patent issues years later, that's like going into your banker and giving him a financial statement saying, my revenues are $5 million. He says, oh, really, $5 million? And then you have to say, oh, well, that's what I expect them to be in 5 years.
Right.
And you would never do that.
So you got to be careful about that. Invention-Protection.com. David Dossi, thanks for being here. Good job today. We'll see you next time.
Thank you, Jim.
David Dossi, folks, check it out. And go look at those myths that he has available to you for free on his website. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blasingham, the Small Business Advocate, reminding you to always seek excellence, not perfection.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.